The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
If you are looking for life and career enhancements, you need experts that have been there, done that, tried, sometimes failed, and ultimately succeeded. Welcome to The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. You may be looking for help with relationships, health and wellness, home life, career, finance, or faith. We hopefully have the answers you are seeking. Now, here is your host, Scott Ventrella.
Hello there, and welcome to the show. Thank you for joining me today. I'd like to dive into this whole topic of forgiveness. Think about that. How many of you right now are holding or have been holding a grudge for a very long time? Was it a slight offense? Was it something major? But I think a lot of people do hold on to grudges. I think some people, I think of my dear grandmother, who would on a regular basis bring up certain grievances, certain people that she simply, you know, could not forgive for various reasons. I decided to do this topic. You know, we're right in the on the Christian calendar. Yesterday was Good Friday. And although this is not a religious program, but using that as an example, that's what kind of prompted me to get into this subject, because I do think there are a lot of people that carry around grudges and carry them to their grave. I don't think it's necessarily a good or healthy thing. Now, Christians, of course, the example we're supposed to be taking is from Jesus on the cross yesterday, Good Friday. One of the last words that he speaks, and I'm paraphrasing, is, "Forgive them, Father, for they know not what they do." And of course, in the Lord's Prayer, as part of it goes, "Forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us." So now this is not just a Christian concept, by the way, but again, given the time of the season, I thought, regardless of what your religious belief or affiliations are or may not be, I do think that this is a fantastic. Okay, we're getting a little extra noise there. Thank you. Whoever did that, you are forgiven. See, I'm getting.
You know, this is your guest. I looked you up online just, you know, to check it out, and all of a sudden, the Voice of America channel came on just when I picked on your picture. So an interesting moment.
Fred, it's perfect timing. And so with that, you know, I wasn't sure you wanted that big of an introduction, but glad to have you on the show. We are we're here with Fred Luskin. He's the director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Projects and an associate professor at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. Yes. Dr. Luskin is the author of the bestseller Forgive for Good, A Proven Prescription for Health and Happiness, Stress-Free for Good, and Forgive for Love. Been doing does a lot of interviews. He has been featured in Time, Ladies Home Journal, all the big publications, New York Times, LA Times, USA Today, Wall Street Journal, and on and on and on. So I would imagine, Fred, that you are, you're somewhat of an expert. How did you even get into this subject of forgiveness? It's a big topic.
You know, there were two kind of streams that got me interested. One is, I was really hurt by somebody. And it was a very close friend who abandoned me, really without notice or any reason that I could think of. And I was really crushed. And I didn't know how to cope with it, and I was a licensed therapist, and it was a total mess, because he just it's almost like he just walked away and there was nothing to explain. And those years were awful. And literally at the end of a few years, my wife looked at me and said, "Fred, you know, I really love you, but I don't like you as much because, you know, you've gotten bitter. You know, I know X was awful, but there's a whole life to be lived." And I really hadn't been able to shake the cobwebs out. And that was a kick in the pants that I needed. And I started to investigate this idea of forgiveness, which had been completely foreign to me. I mean, just like, wow, what is that about? And because I didn't want to lose the affection of somebody who was very important to me, I really had motivation. And because of the motivation, I thought to myself, well, you know, do I want to let this relationship that ended ruin my life or not? It was really much that simple. And the only way out of the box that I had constructed was to forgive him. Like, that was the only way. That was the only place with any space or a door was, hey, you're just going to have to let this go. You're going to have to change your story. You're going to have to grow up. You're just going to have to, you know, walk back outside and see the sun again. And I did that.
Now, did that involve, you know, when you decide, so it starts with, you know, this decision to forgive, and then in your particular personal example, did you actually contact the gentleman, and is that part of the process? Do you actually have to say, you know, I forgive you?
You know, just to back you up a little, the decision often first isn't that I want to forgive. The decision is I don't want to suffer so much. I don't see that many people saying magnanimously, you know, I just want to forgive this person. Mm. What they say is, I'm sick of the pain, and all of the other approaches haven't worked. Mm. And that's more commonly what leads to forgiveness.
Interesting.
What I did was, because I was a therapist, and because I was interested, and this is the other stream, I had been interested in spiritual kind of things, and I had meditated and done yoga. I tried to think of, well, how could some of the simple practices that I had been reading about in this spiritual stuff help me? And when I had the right framework, they turned out to be helpful. So I will tell you the two things that at that point were most instrumental. Again, but it only came because I didn't want to suffer. It wasn't like I want to let him go or him have a good life or anything. It was just, you know, I'm tired of this. I started to look at the good in my life that already existed. You know, I started to, like, take my head up out of wherever I had put it and look around and see, wow, life is still pretty darn good. And I started reminding myself that he didn't belong to me, that, you know, we had independent trajectories, and those trajectories don't always have to stay aligned. And those two very simple truths became the Stanford Forgiveness Project, and have helped millions of people. Now, the other question is, do you have to tell them? The answer is no. Hmm.
They may not even realize that in some way they are in need of forgiveness, or that they have offended someone.
But that's often true.
So this is more...
What's so interesting about this is, and again, you can only imagine how many people whose stories I've listened to, and we've gone to literally awful places in the world to do this. I mean, we've done some of this work with people who have had their family members murdered in Northern Ireland. We've done work like this in Sierra Leone after the attacks on 9/11 in New York City, just awful places. And we've dealt with people who have literally nothing going on, but they've turned it into a huge thing in their life. The question is not the responsibility of the offender, but the victims taking responsibility for their own well-being. And that's the responsibility that needs to emerge.
That is just I'm really trying to get my head. I understand the words. I understand what you're saying. I never really thought about it that way. In other words, some people will not forgive unless an apology is issued, and so there are there are conditions that are attached. I'm very interested in hearing. You know, you mentioned I'm familiar a little bit with the Sierra Leone studies, Northern Ireland. With 9/11, with some of the people that you had interviewed, you know, what were just, you know, at a kind of a broadly speaking, you know, what were some of the, my guess would be that most people would not be so willing to forgive, period, at any time.
And you can only imagine how ridiculously challenging it was what we did, which was, I believe, 5 years after the attack on the World Trade Center. And I can remember one story in particular. One, I can't tell you that it was told to me by one person, but I can tell you one thematic was a woman described being on the phone with her son, and he was at work in the World Trade Center. And she was probably living in Queens, you know, I'm making something up, but somewhere else in New York City. And they're just chatting. You know, it's early in the morning, and he got to work early, and he's talking to his mom. And then out of the corner of his eye, he notices something peculiar, like this plane, like out in the horizon, like not looking as if it's at the right altitude. And then he is describing to his mother this strange plane that appears to be flying towards New York City, and then he's killed. So, I've heard other stories like that, you know, not that graphic and heart-wrenching, but like that. And you know, you sit there and you think to yourself, how could any mother forgive the malevolence of people who have so little regard for human life or other people's experience that they would do that? I mean, that's what you're asking, and that's a very legitimate question. It's just the wrong question. The right question is, like, for that mother or for any of us, how do I survive this tragedy without making it a worse tragedy for me and the people around me? Like, how do I recover so that this horror doesn't make it the story of the rest of my life? And that's the question that people can ask to, like, resurrect their families, resurrect their friends, resurrect their own life. And it's getting them to ask that question that's the most important part of forgiveness work.
It reminds me, because it was so recently in the news, the beheaded U.S. aid worker Peter Kasich, his parents forgave his killer, and I'm quoting the father, Ed Kasich, read the following statement: "Please allow our family the time and privacy to mourn, cry, and yes, forgive, and begin to heal." Again, I just thought it was so powerful. This wasn't 3 years, 5 years, 10 years later. This was, and it was a very public event, as you're aware. And it just seems so against the human nature. Even though, again, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, Christians, and I'm sure other faiths, you know, there may be something similar, but are really required, you know, to forgive, you know, any offense. It just seems to, and I'm being just very, I believe I'm sharing sentiment that when I think about other people that have been deeply offended, it just seems so, it's such a difficult thing for people to do, to be able to make that kind of a statement. Yes, you know, we forgive this person who did this horrendous thing. But you're saying that the right question to ask is, how do I survive this tragedy and not make it worse? How do I go on living my life difficult thing to get, I'm sure, for people to get their heads wrapped around.
Well, it's not just how do I survive this tragedy, but if I have other children, how do I continue to care for them and provide for them a model of resilience, of coping, of health? How do I stop this cycle of violence? Like, what's my role then in the human drama? Like, am I just another bitter person who continues that one generation after another, one person after another, so that more violence is a necessity? Or do I put something in place that doesn't have that experience? And so it's not just that we're victims. Mm-hmm. We are part of a endless human drama and experience, and each of us is responsible for what we contribute to it.
Now
It's some people can hold on to the identity of victim for their entire lives, and that's a choice, but it doesn't mean that that's been a successful life, and people know that. The one other thing I will say to you that you want to be careful with is, yes, unforgiveness, revenge, bitterness, harshness, those are all innately wired into the human brain. But so are compassion and forgiveness and kindness. They're all hardwired in. It's not that we're only programmed to be, react harshly or tightly to difficulty. We have a wide range of programming available to us. We have choice over which programming become manifest. We have a choice as individuals, and we have a choice as a culture.
In your the Stanford University Forgiveness Project, you lay out some very compelling reasons why you shared some of those reasons in our discussion, but you actually outlined several, benefits relative to this whole idea of forgiving. Decrease in feelings of hurt, a reduction in physical symptoms of stress, including backache, muscle aches, dizziness, upset stomach. So, and there are others. I think that that's so. In a sense, what you're saying is holding on to grudges, having an unforgiving kind of a mindset, or choosing not to forgive, can actually have ill effects to our health, mental and physical.
Absolutely, and the reason you called me, and the reason I'm probably the best known forgiveness teacher in the United States is, one, I did my work out of Stanford University, which is a level above most universities. But two, we had data early on that forgiveness made a difference in physical health. Mm. So because it made a difference in physical health, and I was, a researcher out of a world-class university, hundreds of media outlets wanted to find out about this. Like, that's, it's amazing stuff. Like, wait a minute, you mean if I just act a little less aggrieved, I may lower my blood pressure? Well, the answer is yes. Mm. But that's a duh. It doesn't take a Stanford scientist, to say, hey, if you're just a little less angry for the next 5 years, you'll probably do your heart some good. I mean, my guess is I could walk into a kindergarten class and say, hey, little people, let me give you two scenarios. Which one do you think will work out best for your body? It's just that our conditioning is so deep around revenge and bitterness and kind of victimhood that it's hard to see outside of that frame to understand that other frames might be better for one's health and well-being.
Well, it's time for a break. When we come back, though, I'd love to dig into, what are some of the first steps we can take to forgiveness. We're here speaking with Fred Luskin. He is the director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Projects and an associate professor at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. We will continue with this wonderful topic of forgiveness right after these messages.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
If you are interested in real estate in America's largest city or anywhere, be sure to listen for Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco. Although our focus is on Manhattan and other real estate markets in and around New York City, we'll have plenty of information that will help you successfully buy, sell, and close a transaction no matter where you are in the world. Good Morning New York Real Estate with Vince Rocco can be heard every Tuesday at 9 a.m. in New York, 6 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
The world we live in has become a crazy place. Poverty is at an all-time high in the wealthiest nation on earth. We keep calling on government to save us with new programs. And now, we have more people using food stamps than any time in our history. This problem continues to get worse. The answer to poverty is in our homes, churches, and communities, and through our children. Get the answers from The Mickey Ellison Show, Wednesdays at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern, on Voice America Variety.
The Internet's number one talk station. Number one talk station. VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. To reach the show today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to scott@thebusinessofliving.com. Now, back to the show.
And welcome back. We're here speaking with Fred Luskin. The topic for today is forgiveness. And I've always thought that I was pretty good at being able to forgive. And thanks to my short-term memory, I'm pretty good at forgetting as well. Not perfect, but it's certainly something that I try to work on. Now, there are other things. Here's what's interesting, Fred, is that, you know, we talked a little bit about, 9/11, and I live in a community just an hour north of New York City, only 24,000 people, but many people in the greater, New York area were impacted directly or indirectly. We lost a young man right out of college. Tyler Ugolin, probably 21, 22 years old. Every year on 9/11, I see his parents, his brother, family. They go to the 12 o'clock mass where he's remembered. They were, very much a part of the community here. There's a basketball court. He was a standout basketball player, and there was a basketball court that's named in his honor. My point is this, that and we even have an I-beam from the World Trade Center that was erected here on community property, public property, as a little bit of a memorial. And I think every time I go past that, it just brings me back to that day. And even though I wasn't directly, personally impacted, there I have a harder time finding it within me to forgive the people that flew those airplanes into the buildings, flew the plane into the Pentagon in Pennsylvania, in Shanksville, I think the name was. I don't know. Does that make any sense to you? That if somebody offends me personally, I don't really have no matter how deeply I might have been hurt, I can pretty much get past that pretty easily. But these other things, even this young man who crashed the plane into the side of the mountain in the French Alps last week, I just have a hard time with that. How would you explain that?
Oh, boy, you brought up a lot of things for me. I grew up in Long Island, and I lived out here when the World Trade Center attacks happened. But I had to be in New York maybe 2 weeks later. And I remember flying in and then driving on the Southern State Parkway, getting off of Kennedy Airport and seeing all of the banners and all of the names, and as one town after another had lost people in that attack. And it was such a different experience than being 3,000 miles away. It was so different. So I understand, a lot just from that visceral sense of what you're asking me, because it was your community that lost people not my community in the same way. That said, there is some degree of trauma when violence occurs that is outside of what any normal person would say makes sense, is like within whatever bounds of decent behavior there is, and is beyond the capacity to expect or even like forgive me, not be the right word, but make sense out of. Mm. So, you know, everybody in that area to some degree lost family members. I mean, it was very tangible. That creates brain patterning because, you know, you're not capable of integrating that information. I mean, who can integrate the fact that somehow people can convince themselves that their religion believes that they should slaughter people? I mean, that's just ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So how do you integrate this? It's very challenging. What you're describing, though, is your own small experience of people's need to heal. I mean, you know, even if there are, like, you have to think there are thousands of people like you and like anybody in so many circumstances. So the woman comes home and finds out that her husband's having an affair, and somebody else comes home and finds out that their boss fired them and, you know, hired their enemy for a job unfairly. Mm. I mean, there are so many things that happen as people where whatever we think is normal and right is violated. And it's legitimate and necessary to feel destabilized and even, like, violated. But, and the big but is that's not healthy as a long-term solution or strategy to how to deal with these kind of situations, and you're walking evidence of it, that nothing really happened to you, but 15 years later, you can still feel its effects.
Well, especially when there are the reminders of, so for example, another gentleman that was killed the same day from my town had three young children, two were the same grade as my children. And so for the last 15 years, they were little kids. Then you go to, you know, the first confirmation, there they are, the mom and the kids. Go to my daughter's high school graduation, there's the mom, there's the son, he had all kinds of honors, handsome young man, looked just like his dad. And so, you know, it just when it seems to be fading and I can kind of think, okay, this is something, you know, and I'm speaking very personally here, but then there it is back in your face again, you know, these reminders of, you know, that dad should have been there. That dad should have been there to see his son, you know, graduate from high school. So I think some people will try to run away, you know, so that they're not reminded of the tragedy here. Again, 20 minutes north of me, we had the Sandy Hook school shooting. They just raised the home of that young man who killed all those young people and the teachers. And again, just, you know, we don't want any reminder of that. And so I think sometimes that there tends to be a tendency, let's say, to just remove ourselves from anything that might remind us. But my guess is, Fred, and again, here you're the expert, is that may not be that's probably only temporary, or it certainly solves that problem of, you know, really what we're talking about here is to be able to truly forgive and to move on with our lives.
You know, what you're saying is, again, gets back to what we talked about a little while ago, which is who is responsible for my healing or my well-being. And if I make that responsibility external, then, you know, then it's about raising houses or doing all sorts of other things. But if I make that responsibility mine, that I need to, like, heal myself, that I need to let go of myself as a victim, I need to be at peace with my own life, mm.
then it's a very different thing, because then I'm responsible for my own well-being. And then when I get triggered, like you got triggered by seeing the memorial, or whatever it is, whatever we get triggered by,
yeah,
we then have to be responsible to work with our own minds and body to heal ourselves. Like you can't, like we can't expect the world to stop simply because we're still hurt. And that's the crucial shift.
So in your personal story, you had mentioned, maybe not your words exactly, but you became, you know, introspective, you did meditation and yoga, you studied this. Is that what we need to do? Or, because I'm sure that, you know, that a lot of people thinking, okay, I understand, and I do need to take responsibility for this and for myself. It sounds like a lot of work.
The work is in the
taking. Can't you just give me a pill? Can't you just give me a pill to take, and you know, and then it's done? You know, I'm being facetious here. But
no. But the work is in taking of responsibility, not in the practice of it. So let's just give an example. Let's say that you've made some kind of cognitive decision, which some researchers say is true. Like, first you decide to forgive, like you said before, and then you somehow muddle through and figure it out, right? Mm. So let's just say you decided that you're going to not forgive the attackers of 9/11, but no longer have a strong emotional reaction, that it's just part of what happened, and you don't want it to contaminate you. You don't want to ever forget. So that when you find yourself triggered, there are things you can do. So one of the things that anybody can do is physically calm themselves down, and that's where meditation or yoga or even just, you know, making a phone call to someone you love rather than stewing in it, that will make a huge difference. You just take action to calm you physically down. That's a very simple step that anybody can take. Another one is a cognitive, you know, statement, which is, you know, I grieve this. This was awful, but I don't want to be stuck in the past. You know, that's a cognitive way of looking at it. There are, you know, like there are totally physical ways of doing it. You just take a little run. You know, you could run. If you run, move quickly for 20 or 30 seconds, you can get rid of most of the body's anxiety. But if you saw it as your responsibility to get yourself together at that moment, those are the things that you would do, and then the feeling would pass. And once you learn that the feeling can pass, you're not so much of a victim.
Mm-hmm. You make a statement. I was actually, again, as I was looking into some of your writings, you mentioned that forgiveness does not necessarily mean reconciliation with the person that hurt you. That said, is it? Are there some benefits to, you know, to seeking that person out and seeking reconciliation?
You know, if you use the people who commandeered those planes, those there's no way to reconcile with them. I mean, they killed themselves as well. So you have to recognize by that forgiveness is independent of reconciliation. Those are two streams. They can be of help to each other, but they don't have to be. Now, if you know what you also mentioned a while ago is that many people don't believe they've done anything wrong. They can do the worst behavior and justify it. So waiting for them to apologize or be like a nice human being, you know, it's like waiting for Godot. You know, it ain't going to happen.
What am I supposed to be apologizing for? In fact, you owe me an apology, right?
All the time you get that. You get that all the time. What are you bothering me for? You're the one who did X, Y, and Z. Or you're the one who's so oversensitive that you're still worrying about something that happened 2 years ago. Get your life together.
Yeah. And so we're talking about, you know, degrees of, let's say, offenses, some that are just really super, just egregious, and then others that might be, you know, petty things, a slight, but some people will, again, they'll never speak to another person for whatever that reason might be, or they'll never go to another family function or talk to that person again, even again for something that may just be a minor slight that the supposed offending party is not even aware of. Amazing.
You know, there's two other things that I can say about that. One is when they give people like ambiguous situations, such as I'm trying to think of the right words. Like they'll give people pictures of like events, and then they'll say, okay, who describe what happened, and then they'll put some people in at the offender point of view, and they'll say, talk about this picture. So they'll describe the picture, and the offender will be an innocent bystander. You know, I was just driving my car, and unfortunately this person ran out of the house and ran in front of my car. And then they'll describe it as the victim's point of view, and it's totally ambiguous. And the victim will say, I was sitting in a bunker, you know what I mean? And I had radar detectors on, and somehow this car evaded all of them and slammed into us. So our very perceptual mechanism is self-protective, is often dishonest in the service of protecting the self. So even people who do egregious things have figured out some way to talk to themselves where they don't recognize they're doing egregious things. And so that's what makes human life so challenging.
So we're coming up on a break, and that's, you know, we've been talking about forgiveness, and when we come back from the break, I'd love to get your thoughts, because I'm going to now flip this. I want to talk about revenge, because, and I'm going to be brutally honest here. You know, when I'm watching a movie, you know, pick whatever, the movie is, some kind of a drama where, you know, some wrong has been committed, and, you know, pick one of the, like, the Patriot Games or Harrison Ford or whatever, where his family gets massacred or whatever, and he's after the bad guys, and then he catches up to the bad guys, and he just, you know, takes care of them. And it just, it feels so good. I don't know about you, I don't know about anybody else, but when I'm watching that, I can feel an adrenaline kick. Why does revenge feel so good when, you know, forgiveness is the way to go? We'll pick up on that right after these messages. Thank you.
Stimulating talk.
It gets those synapses in the brain firing really fast.
All the time. The number one internet talk station where your opinion counts. VoiceAmerica.com.
All around the outermost rim of the shield, he set the mighty stream of the river Oceanus, creating Achilles' shield in Homer's The Iliad, Book 18.
Rachel Carson in The Sea Around Us said,
all at last, return to the sea, to Oceanus, the ocean river, like the ever-flowing stream of time, the beginning and the end.
Moyer's Environmental Dialogues with Dr. Rob Moyer offers lively dialogue and revealing narrative inquiry into how individuals are overcoming obstacles and creating a greener and blue planet Earth.
Tune in Thursdays at 3 p.m. Eastern, 12 noon Pacific on the Voice America Variety Channel.
What if there was a radio show that could demonstrate how we can cut your taxes in half without diminishing needed government services? One that could explain how to create tens of millions of jobs at no cost to taxpayers, as well as fantastic yet easily affordable health care. Side effects include cutting crime rates nationwide, providing better education for our children, international peace and harmony, and protecting your private personal data from government intrusion. Tune in to Libertarians Working for You with Arvind Vora, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific, on Voice America Variety.
What sets apart VoiceAmerica.tv from the other video content providers on the Internet? Choice and flexibility means that you can host your video content live or on demand on the main VoiceAmerica.tv channels through your own branded media player or your own private TV channel. We support multiple media formats, so all of your video content can be in one place. We offer a number of advertising and video packages. For more information, visit VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
Streaming live, the leader in Internet talk radio, VoiceAmerica.com.
This is The Business of Living with Scott Ventrella. To reach the show today, call in to 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send an email to scott@thebusinessofliving.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back. We're here speaking with Fred Luskin. He is the director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Projects. He's also the author of Learning to Forgive. Just before the break, Fred, I was mentioning how, you know, I watch these movies where, you know, the bad guys do bad things to good people, and then you get the hero. I think actually of Clint Eastwood. During the break, Fred and I were talking about various movies, Dirty Harry or Unforgiven, where, you know, finally, you know, the bad guys get it, and it just feels so good, and I can feel that adrenaline, like, yeah, go get them. And it's that, you know, it's not right, but it's, I'm just sharing a very human kind of reaction to revenge.
You know, it's not that it's not right. There's nothing wrong with that. You have to understand that there is a big difference between having, say, neurons that respond to things and going out and doing it yourself. So, you know, and movies are phenomenal at exploiting these capacities of ours. So,
right.
Right? I mean, and they know how to, people know how to, like, titrate it so that you're kept on edge and that, you know, you're invested in the outcome, and they limit the amount of knowledge you have. So it's all orchestrated that way. And so, as I mentioned before, we have revenge circuits in our brain. We have to. I mean, there are certain situations where you have to take revenge. There are just certain ones you have to pay back. And so being able to anticipate them, being able to visualize them, being able to respond when somebody else does it, that's essential to our human functioning. On the other hand, we have all the circuits for goodness. So people are often easily aroused by human goodness in movies. So we would watch Mother Teresa, Minutes to the Sick. We would never do it. But we have the brain and the body that responds to it. You can watch movies of great kindness. There are stories of heroism of human beings all over, and people flock to them. And it's the same mechanism. It's just, what do you do in your actual life that's important? But you can be captivated or triggered because you, again, are wired with the same tendencies as every other human being on the planet.
So in you have touched on some of the steps to forgiveness, and one of the, I'm looking at something here that I picked up where you talk about 9 steps to forgiveness, and you have touched on some of those. But one of the things that you mention is, you know, remember that a life well lived is your best revenge. Explain that.
You know, that's not something that I can take credit for. That's a pretty well-known statement. Is, like, the only way to really have revenge on someone who harmed you is to be happy. Mm. In any other way, they still got you. And the only way that you are, like, really, like, say, beyond the offense is when it doesn't matter to you and it doesn't influence how happy you are. And so that's it. I mean, you know, it's wonderful if
if you can be in your life and treat it as a speed bump, then you're done. Right? You know what I mean? Like, well, it really hurt me in the past, but why would I worry about it now? I've made a good life for myself.
Right.
Right? Do you see what I'm saying? That's the only real revenge.
Does time somehow factor into this whole idea of forgiveness? In other words, okay, look, I'm not ready. It just happened yesterday. When somebody says, hey, look, you just got to get past it. You got to forgive the person. No, I'm sorry. The wound is too fresh. Give me a week, give me a month, give me some years. Does time in any way factor into it, or should we not put it on some kind of a arbitrary, you know, time frame?
Time is essential.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, time is... It's more than essential. That's a stupid thing. But time is the first healer. It's time and the capacity to grieve. And so what is essential is that we take time to feel the wound, to feel the hurt, to feel the pain, and to deal with that. And so it's grieving that is the beginning of healing, that you acknowledge that you were wounded, that you were unprepared, that it's devastating, that the loss is for real, that this person may not be replaceable, that who knows, you know,
but
you're going to feel the problem and the wound, and you have to do that because any loss that's real contains pain. The problem is when the pain doesn't end, or you frame it so that you're endlessly a victim of something, then you don't allow the normal healing to take place, which is, yes, I was devastated, and I moved on. I grew. I accepted. I made peace. Or I just said, you know, this sucks. There's nothing I can do about it. But you stopped facing backwards and you started facing forwards. That's the crucial shift.
So I like what you're saying, that there is a natural, let's say, process that we go through, grieving, allowing ourselves to grieve. Now, what about the anger? As long as it doesn't carry on, I would imagine, you know, we need to allow ourselves to be angry as well?
Absolutely. What's interesting about anger is the emotion, though, that's meant for short-term responses.
Uh-huh.
So if somebody's harming one of your kids, get pissed and do something about it. You know, like let's say you see somebody molesting a child of yours. Well, use that anger, get furious, and stop them. I mean, just stop them.
Right.
And maybe for a month later, you know, the anger keeps you from recognizing the vulnerability that you faced when your kid was harmed. You want to stay angry so you can integrate that vulnerability. That anger is useful. But if you're angry 6 months later, you're just charring your nervous system. And so some data is that if anger is the predominant emotion 6 months after, it's a prognosticator for a bad outcome. You want to have anger there as for a while, and then there's sadness and fear and confusion and, you know, helplessness and all sorts of other things that if they're not there too, again, you're just going to burn yourself out.
Do you recommend actually, seeking out professional help or a mentor, a clergy, close friend, just to kind of articulate it, talk it out? I find that sometimes when people do that, it can be healing. Other times, it just keeps, you know, it just kind of stirs up the, you know, the anger and the, you know, those hard feelings again, over and over and over.
True. That short term, you need people to talk to. And in fact, there's some data that shows that if you don't talk it out, your outcome's going to be worse. That we need other people's support and love and affection and, you know, and just, I share this with you, to make it through most things. The problem is the people who don't heal, they keep on telling the story and they tell it to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
The people who do heal have a couple of trusted people that they keep appraised and they talk to and they share it with, and but they're not announcing to the world, poor me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have a best friend or a parent or a wife or, a, you know, somebody that they are intimate with and a couple of people, and they keep appraised, but it's not their identity. And now, that's the difference.
Now, in the Stanford University Forgiveness Projects, is that an ongoing study?
It's an ongoing. We haven't done a study in a while because I feel like we got enough data to show that what we do works. But we still go to places in the world that need help.
We
still teach forgiveness on campus and into the community here. And I myself travel all over the place to consult and train on forgiveness and other kind of emotional healing qualities.
Do you work with healthcare professionals, counselors as well?
Of course.
Yeah. Now, in the studies, was there anything to suggest that there were any cultural differences, or I mentioned as somebody who practices the Christian faith, that's kind of it's one of the values, you know, forgiveness. But whether scientific research or just anecdotally or your own personal view, are there differences? Are we all, or did you find that regardless of culture, religious affiliation or not, et cetera, that some people are more somehow able to forgive than others?
You know, again, your question has an answer of all are true in different circumstances.
Okay.
One of the things that's been found about religions is the people who just mouth a religion, they're not necessarily more forgiving. You know, just to call yourself a Christian doesn't necessarily add anything.
Mm-hmm.
But those people who practice their religion, they tend to have more of these virtues. You know, those people who actually go to church, actually read the Bible, actually pray, and actually try to make the words of Jesus or wherever the teacher is manifest, that has an effect. But it's not just announcing or saying, or you know, that I'm this or that. That doesn't appear to have any impact at all.
Right.
So culture, yes, but certain mm-hmm. cultures favor certain responses. Mm-hmm. You know, some cultures are less aggressive than other cultures. Some cultures have a more, you know, laissez-faire attitude. But the inherent, like, perspective of human beings that they have very primitive responses to harm where they strike out, that is cross-cultural. And it takes a certain degree of safety and a kind of emotional maturity to get past that, but safety is a big part of it. It's very hard to be magnanimous if you're not safe.
Mm. So Fred, this has been a big part of your life work, and you're human like all of us. I'm sure you're not immune to, you know, insults and slights and things like that. Is it easier for you to, you know, forgive and move on, or do you sometimes still have, a little bit of a struggle?
Again, the answer is both. It is easier because I've practiced and taught about, and it's still a struggle.
Yeah.
The big change, though, occurred 20-plus years ago with my friend, because the key is, you know, you have to understand that human beings, we do what was successful for us in the past. Or if we have no success, then we have the default of kind of adrenaline and fear because we haven't figured it out. So once I was able to forgive this person, it was stored in my mind as a solution that worked.
Mm.
That's why when we teach, the most important thing we teach is start forgiving things that are small so that you can build neural pathways to draw upon. You know, like, okay, your body and brain know you can do this, so it's going to bring it back as a possibility down the road. If you don't have success to draw upon, it's one of the reasons why, you know, people who have bitter divorces, their status is that they're more likely going to divorce the next time than make a successful marriage, is because, one, they have schema of divorce, but two, they don't have perspectives of having had a successful relationship. Mm-hmm. So it's very hard to draw upon those strategies when you haven't used them.
Fred,
it's the same thing with anything else in life. You want to practice success.
I appreciate so much having you on the show. Fred Luskin is the director of the Stanford University Forgiveness Projects, an associate professor at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology. But I want to make sure, and we'll have this on the website on Voice America, definitely check out the, go to Learning to Forgive, all one word, easy to remember, Learning to Forgive. And also make sure you pick up a copy of Fred's book, which, of the similar, along the same lines of as the website, but the name of the book is Forgive for Good. Again, Fred, thank you so much for being on the show, and thank you all for listening in. We'll see you again next week. Take care. Have a good one.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Living. Please join Scott Ventrella for another edition of the show next Saturday morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, 11 a.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Variety Channel. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. We'll see you here next Saturday.